morning. Today is Wednesday, November the 8th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor, Mr. Wilson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. It's always great to be here.
You like Dolby, huh? You guys like reading the cue cards.
I'm just doing what you told me
to. Yeah. Our quote this morning comes from Virginia Satter. We must not allow other people's limitations. Let me start that over again. That was almost an Eleanor Roosevelt one. I didn't want to do that. We must not allow other people's limited perceptions to define us.
Sure.
There we go. Okay, got it out.
That happens to me all the time.
Hey, what do you think the upshot of the fires in Sonoma County are going to mean to Humboldt County? Humboldt and Mendocino. Do you think there's going to be business relocations here? Do you think there's going to be some folks that might be pushing to have new forms of land management, containment, et cetera, come into play? Do you think that there's going to be anything like that, or is it just kind of survival mode, let's rebuild and continue on?
I don't think we're going to see a lot of shift or change here. I mean, most of what was damaged in those areas were either homes and or agricultural activities that will probably reestablish themselves in those same locations. There wasn't a lot of, you know, there were some hotels. I mean, a lot of the damages there were very site specific. So I wouldn't predict you're going to see a lot of migration, certainly. But certainly the issue of wildfire and the urban rural interface was something that, of course, was brought up again. I mean, one of the things that was discovered, I think, is part of the, I think it was the Tubbs fire, was, you know, almost in the same footprint as a similar fire in 1964. And yet, in the lessons learned from that in terms of land use, in terms of development patterns, didn't seem to really apply. And so now people are really talking about in those areas, like, what is the way forward? Do, you know, how is it that we develop? And we had some of those questions when we just did our general plan process. And certainly, you know, that was one of the reasons why I was probably a no vote on our general plan. I didn't feel like it addressed the potential for wildfire here in terms of allowing for residential development on a lot of our timber and ag lands in ways that, you know, those types of patterns both increase the cost of dealing with those fires and they increase the likelihood of having them. And so that was one of my concerns. And I'd certainly would be good if we could learn from the mistakes of others. You know, we've had wildfires here in Humboldt County too. And some of you even brought up
Trinidad burned down in 1940s.
Right. Right. Well,
the whole area there.
So I think in 07, there used to be a village of Lufenholz, I think was taken out by a wildfire. So it can happen
that
here.
Wasn't 10 years ago, 07.
No,
plus 100, yeah.
Yeah, plus 100. But, I mean, what it shows is that where a lot of times we feel, well, it's moist here and there's fog and wildfire is not such a big, you know, issue for us. It really can be. And
particularly if you have mills.
Yeah.
And fire and things like that.
Right, yeah. Right. But if we, you know, start to encourage those patterns of allowing for more residential uses in our timberlands, basically our natural resource lands, then we're going to see more risk. And it costs us more, you know, from a taxpayer perspective to protect those things because, you know, that means the focus has to be on saving lives in areas where you didn't have to before. And then it becomes harder to keep up with fires in that case.
Yeah, once you get out of that,
right,
area.
And that's a substantial shift or policy change we made in the update for the general plan, which was basically principally permitting residences on all timber and ag land parcels in the county. And so that, you know, that's pretty significant. And what the pattern of development that could create.
That's across the board, or is that like in dairy lands and areas like that that are a little bit more?
It's
a different type of use.
The policy used to be before this was that if you had a residence, it had to be an accessory to, or it had to be in support of that, if it was on timberland, had been support of the timber use, meaning, you know, the management of that, or it was in support of the agriculture. But now it's principally permitted, meaning it's not. It's principally permitted for residential, and it's then up to the interpretation of how that doesn't get in the way of timber use, or
so it doesn't have to be as related or connected.
Right, exactly. It just has to not get in the way of. But that's really hard to do, especially over time, and especially what we see with timber. So what happens is that you have people move into these places. They're not accustomed to timber and ag uses necessarily, and you get a lot more conflicts between the residents that live there and those uses. And so we're even seeing that, especially in my district, District 3, you know, there's certainly more folks moving in from out of town, getting their houses in the hills that they dreamed about from wherever they came from. And then when the timber harvest plan starts to be discussed, there's a lot of complaints about it and a lot more hoops. And so this becomes a conflict. And, one of the concerns I have is actually the loss of timber jobs related to that, because we're starting to build into those spaces and causing more and more conflicts. It's not
so. You think it more than just like Freshwater and mm-hmm. Neyland Road, you know, Greenwood Heights, and that kind of stuff.
For sure, that's one of the areas. Yeah, well, that's I probably, because that's my district, you know, the district I represent. That certainly is one, and you know, one of the locations that I had concerns with and voice concern with was about 200 acres that was timber to be then we converted the land use to rural residential 5-acre minimums, but that was on the what we call the south side of the of that Neyland Ridge. So this is where it's sort of dipping down into the viewshed as well. It's starting to, you know, those kinds of developments can actually change how what that freshwater watershed looks like, how it's managed, and sort of it's just really changes that a lot. And, you know, this was not really a request of the neighborhood of Freshwater. They didn't say, like, hey, what we really need and what we'd really like is this. But, you know, that's how the cookie crumbles sometimes. And, you know, we voted on it.
I was the tree falls.
I was a no vote, and we're moving on from there. I mean, you know, But one of, you know, kind of going back to that concern, which is wildfire. And certainly the more you disperse these residences into these timberlands, the more problems you might have.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long, on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears, and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, with the general plan itself, one of the things that it's always, well, okay, I can't say always now. Let's say for the last 20-something years since I've been banging the drum on it, that I've found very intriguing is that it's always been positioned as a land use budget.
Yeah.
Okay, it's flexible, it's living, it's breathing, it can be adjusted, I don't know. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yet it didn't seem to get to the point of being passed until a couple weeks ago.
Yep. Well,
so that the amendments could be made.
Right.
And make the adjustments and keep this thing a living, breathing kind of.
Right.
So as an example, let's say there's a modification that's wanted.
Yep.
After it gets formally adopted and mm-hmm. goes into effect, how does that process then occur to have whatever amendments, whatever changes mm-hmm. that an area may want to have? How do you go through that?
Well, in general, you know, someone has to make that request for an amendment. So sometimes the amendment to the general plan is through a project-oriented things. So somebody wants to do a subdivision or change that requires a change in the general plan in terms of its designations. So then they put in an application to do that, and it goes through the planning process. It goes through the planning commission, and then if it's appealed, that comes to the Board of Supervisors. And basically,
so you guys may not ever see it.
Yeah, but
other than just to go thumbs up, thumbs down.
Right, but what has to, you know, you have to make a determination that it's in the best interests of the public to do this thing, you know, that it meets the, you know, some sort of logical, you know, benefit, either health and safety or economic or, you know, whatever they may be. And sometimes it requires overriding considerations, but there is a process to do that, to make those amendments. And sometimes amendments to the general plan are policy driven and not necessarily project driven.
So that's more of just kind of clarifying?
Well, it could be creating, say you want to have a policy to ban some sort of maybe certain kind of signs or something like that, or whatever it may be, or some sort of land use, or maybe you want to make more options for land use, maybe you want to make something more flexible, then that requires a general plan amendment to do that. And so you have to go through those processes to do it. It's not as big as you would for a general plan update, because that's the whole thing.
It's all county, right?
Right, right. But it does... It does have process to it. So, yeah, I mean, and that'll be good to update that. We're supposed to do that maybe every 5 years now. We'll see how that goes.
So now, that's like a freshening up of it, or is that...
Well, it's like a review of where things are really going, because there's a lot of assumptions that you make. And going back to sort of the housing, you know, we made this assumption that although we created 34,000 or some tens of thousands of potential locations for residences to be out in these county parcels all over the place, right? The assumption is that the growth rate is a certain amount and that the focus of that growth will be in certain locations. Those are assumptions. And then you want to check up on your assumptions.
So if the marketplace accelerates in one area,
right,
or on the flip side, doesn't happen at all.
Right. Right. So say you start getting developments in areas that are really concentrating, and again, a concern for, say, like the 3rd District, which is the area between Arcata and Eureka, is this is an area where, you know, a lot of people from out of the area want to be. They like the view. They like the, you know, what they can get for their money in terms of, like, they can take their $1 million from outside the area and build themselves a pretty nice country home and those sorts of things. And then, so then if that starts to become a driver, say climate is a driver for that, say in other places it's becoming unbearable to live and there's more pressure, then, and we get an unexpected growth rate in a certain area, we can evaluate whether we want to change some of those policies to address that.
So yeah. Did the general plan make allowances for some of the things that we hear about? A number of folks I'm familiar with, mm-hmm, are trying to get new employees here,
mm-hmm,
but there's no housing. Not
was
low rent, not
right.
Just regular old single family homes.
Right.
So when this is now locked in,
mm-hmm,
does that allow for some of those types of just normal expansion in?
Well,
and within the county's jurisdiction?
That was one of my criticisms of this plan in its current context, because some 8 years ago or 9 years ago, you know, there was actually 10% more housing units that would have been approved, and most of those would have been in areas that provide services and close to services, meaning, you know, water, sewer, and public transportation. And in general, those are less expensive to build, and they actually are more you know, associated with the workforce needs, where this plan really pushed that stock out into the hills, much more expensive to build, you know, on a per unit basis, certainly more expensive to service. You know, now there's the sheriff and everybody else has to service these areas, and there's not real any real, income coming in that's a lot of income from
not appreciable enough to offset.
Right. I mean, we don't have development fees like a lot of other counties do to try and help offset that. And so this was, you know, one of those points that, you know, that I had an issue with, which is that we're pushing it out. And certainly we do need more housing. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have any housing out in, you know, in our timber and ag lands. But the point is, that's the point of a plan, is to put that focus on the areas where you need it. And I felt like this one didn't quite hit the nut on that.
The fact that the general plan for the county is in the county jurisdiction, but those butt up against the cities.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a folding of the two together? Or is it you cross the line and, okay, it's a whole different story?
Well, the policies in the plan say that we work with the cities to make sure there's some alignment with that. But, you know, again, you know, in this process, the city of Arcata made some requests of the county, and yeah, we did some of those for them.
We'll pick that up when we come back. Yeah. It's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by REDEC. Mike, the concept of the general plan that the county has approved.
Yep.
Blending, folding over with the cities. Mm-hmm. You know, you would think that there would be a continuity, that there would be a consistency, that there would be a flow. I mean, the difference between the city of Arcata proper and Sunnybury.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, yeah, it's another block away.
Right.
Functionally, yeah, it's pretty much the same neighborhood. It's the same feeling. It's the same type of individual. That blending together, was that part of the concerns that you had?
Well, Sunnybury itself is actually in the Arcata city limits.
Well, I could push it out towards the golf course.
In their general plan. Well, it is actually, yeah. And that is one of the considerations that I think wasn't addressed as well as I would have liked in this general plan, but as moving forward and as a representative of the third district and sort of, you know, with the county level, you know, the city has what's called a green belt that it said, hey, you know, we want to protect the edge, the boundary of the city so that we don't turn into just, you know, what happens like in the East Bay of the Bay Area, where you can't tell one town for another to another to another. That green belts are a really common way of preserving ag lands and or timberlands and open spaces between cities so they can retain that character, right? And certainly that language wasn't necessarily adopted into our general plan and certainly was actually removed as part of that process. But that doesn't mean we can't continue talking about it and hoping that we can make that happen again. Because I think it is one of the things we really value. You know, we shouldn't just take for granted that when we commute home from Eureka to Arcata or McKinleyville, that these views that we see, that we enjoy, are going to be there forever unless we take an active role in doing what we can to preserve them. And again, at the same time, making sure that there's housing for people, making sure that we have working timberlands, making sure that we have, you know, a functional landscape.
So how do you do the balancing act?
Well, this is it, right? This is why you have boards and why you have committees and why you have elections. And this is the process. This is the meat of it. And just because I kind of live politically on one side or maybe on a spectrum, we have multiple voices about that, and that's what we do.
Now, the city of Fortuna had an interesting situation.
Yeah.
The sphere of influence is a concept. I know you're familiar with
that.
And there's, I think there's still certainly a lot of chance for finger pointing. Whose fault? Who did? Who
I wasn't up? On the board.
I know, that's why you're this predates. But I guess there was a presumption made by many of us that certain things were baked into the system.
Yeah.
And sphere of influence back when annexation was going on, and all that was so commonplace mm-hmm. that it appeared, at least from the outside, that it was a structural thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, you know, the phrase of the moment, so to speak.
Yeah.
Did anybody look at the general plan and see if some of these types of things that are just kind of inertia-based, are they now codified? Are they kind of continuing just culturally?
The general plan definitely takes into account and maps out spheres of influence. And I think the conflict you're kind of referring to has to do with the cannabis stuff.
Yeah, the marijuana farm right up against the edge of town.
And I think that was definitely not taken into consideration so much in the general plan process. That came up on this really the tail end, the sort of the explosion, the conflict, you know, and the explosion of growth.
Well, things changing,
And the issue. And even in the context of when we're in the general plan again, looking at ag lands, and there's an 80 acre parcel that converts from ag exclusive to ag general. What that means is that now that 80 acres is now easily subdivided into 20 acres, and where it once was okay to have 10,000 acres of cannabis on that 80 acres, now there's a push to subdivide that into 20 acre parcels because of this land use. So we've changed thousands, and I mean thousands of acres of ag land out of ag exclusive into these other designations, which make that a lot easier.
Well, let's go back to the goat farm thing that mm-hmm. was in Arcata. Again, that predated your arrival, but
yeah.
I'm sure you're
painfully
aware of it.
Yeah. No, I live near where the...
So that was a conforming use,
mm-hmm.
at least as I understand it. But some of the folks that moved into the neighborhood after it was put into place didn't like it.
Right.
Is that kind of basically how it played out? And then the development decided, well, okay, we'll back away. Mm-hmm. We'll find somewhere else instead of doing what would have legally been... Right.
And that is kind of my point. So if we, and that's happening in the urban zones. Now imagine if you have residences on every parcel, you know, not that it would be on every parcel, but you're really, what we're doing is putting at risk those job creating uses, which are ag and timber, basically for real estate speculation is really what that's about. And so, you know, that's a choice. That's why we make these choices. This is how we move these things forward.
KINS, News and Information Times, 8:42. We'll be back with more from Mike Wilson.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, the concept of use, land use, community values.
Right.
Okay, over on one side. And over on the other side is individual property owners' rights,
mm-hmm.
flexibility, choices.
Yep.
On the big teeter-totter.
Yeah.
That's kind of the battle, isn't it?
Oh, it is, absolutely. That is totally where it is, and neither one of these things is absolute, right? And that's part of, you know, there's some folks who want property rights to be an absolute thing. The problem with that is
you don't want the dump located right next to the school.
Whatever. Yeah. Or, you know, or the, you don't want a gas station to necessarily pop up right in the middle of your block or whatever they may be. And so they aren't really absolute. And we do, it's interesting because people often talk about property rights and property values and the values solely tied to the rights. But oftentimes property values are tied with restrictions and to be, you know, that the
going into the purchase.
Well, think about your neighborhood. I mean, the fact that your neighbors can't do a lot of these things that are kind of crazy actually makes your property value higher. So it's actually,
or it gives you certainty. At least.
Right. Right. So the value of your property is actually not just in your rights, but it also that value comes with the restrictions as well. So it's in that balance that you are trying to make it all work. Certainly the next phases of, you know, sort of the general plan process for us is getting this thing, you know, approved. Well, we approved it, but it's got 30 days, you know, before it sets into motion. And then we have a whole list of implementation measures, and we're going to have to really go through those because some things that we're talking about doing in terms of land use changes really require an evaluation or some sort of action done by our board and or the planning staff in order to make those happen. And some of those have to do with watershed evaluations, and some of those have to do with traffic, and some of them have to do, you know, there are things
like the old EIR stuff.
Well, that's what happens in the EIR is you make these lists of mitigations that need to be dealt with, and a lot of them are actions that have to be taken.
But with the county now doing the general plan, there were some changes in a particular land application or opportunity to use it in a certain fashion, if it was reversed, we'd be having to pay for those studies.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the county doing it.
Right. Well, that's certainly true, especially at the sort of larger and watershed level. The other thing that this we did in the general plan update here is that we removed the coastal zone from the general plan update. So the general plan update only applies to everything outside the coastal zone. And basically, we've talked about this on here before, there's a need for an update to the local coastal plan. So instead of doing that separately, it's all going to be done at one time. The general plan update / local coastal plan update section will happen coming up now, where that'll start.
So it's kind of like phase two?
Kind of like phase two. And it's a more discrete discussion. It's just so different, you know, what we're going to be talking about and sort of the issues having to do with Humboldt Bay, having to do
There's not a lot of ranch land right on the coast anymore.
Well, there is.
There's some.
Right.
But not nearly as much as
but
there is.
There's also the interface with the local, the Coastal Commission, right, and their jurisdiction. And it was becoming evident there was going to be too many conflicts with those policies if we folded it into the general plan, you know, in the uplands as well. So it was like, let's separate those two things.
Step at a time.
Yeah, I think it's
now Ryan doesn't have any conflict because he sits on both boards, does he?
No, that's not a conflict. And
every once in a while it's like, oh, okay.
I think he's perfectly equipped and prepared to deal with that. Yeah.
Just got to let that one slide and disappear.
Yeah.
But so a couple weeks, this is in play, and then the next phase, we'll start hearing about that.
Yep. Implementation and Coastal Act.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Yep. And the hits keep on coming. Thanks for popping in.
Hey, it's always great to be here.
See everybody tomorrow.